As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back, Prospects to Pros, on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Dane Brugler, as always, joined by the great Lance Zierlein. We're about a week away from the draft, and it really cannot get here soon enough. It feels like every day brings something a little different for Twitter and social media to talk about when it comes to the draft. Today, Albert Breer from SI.com tweeting that Devontae Smith weighed in at 166 pounds during his medical evaluation in Indianapolis, which gave Twitter all it needed to have many takes on that. But really, I mean, and Lance, just tell me if I'm wrong here, but 166, not really a surprise. He was 172 last spring. He was 160s mm-hmm. before the season, 170 when he weighed at the pro day, and now 166. So, I mean, somewhere between 165, 172, that's likely his playing weight, likely what he's going to be throughout his career. So we already knew he wasn't a big guy.
No, and I think it's what what's hurt his draft stock relative to the tape is that NFL teams. I mean, you know, we can all just say, well, the tape is the tape. The mm-hmm. tape don't lie, and you know all that stuff. But the reality is, Hollywood Brown was a really good player. Hollywood Brown is also very thin. Hollywood Brown not as good a player to me as Devontae Smith. But Hollywood Brown fell some because of that relative to his talent. I mean, Devontae Smith is in a draft with an extraordinarily fast and competitive teammate in Jalen Waddle. He's got a guy who's big, fast, with a huge upside. And then you've got Kyle Pitts, who's also a pass catcher. And there's a bunch of quarterbacks who are getting pushed up. I mean, we'll talk about where he's going to get drafted here in just a little bit on some draft prop bets, because I think Devontae Smith is an interesting one. It doesn't change the fact he's the number three player for me. But I also recognize when I gave him a grade that was that high that I will be going against the NFL trend, which is they prefer players who are bigger, because there have been studies done, and I know this doesn't jive with what you want to hear for a lot of people who just want to just say the tape is all that matters and everything else is a lie. The fact is, smaller players typically will have more issues with durability. And I've never seen it with Devontae Smith. He's tough as nails. He's a gunner and all that stuff. That's why I gave him the grade I gave him. And there's other guys that I think durability could be a concern, and I pushed them down. So I didn't factor it in my personal grade. I'm rolling with what I see. However, you and I, Dane, both know that these kind of concerns are very real with a lot of NFL teams who have size standards.
And let's face it, Devontae Smith is an outlier. And some teams, a lot of teams, are not willing to invest a first-round pick, especially top 15 pick, in an outlier. It's over 6 foot and around 170 pounds. That's just, there's not a track record of, Marvin Harrison was at least 181 at the combine in 96. So there's not just not a great track record of guys that size, height-wise, but also that lean, who have gone on to be first-round picks and have success in the NFL. So, you know, the tape is fantastic. And I think your point is valid When you talk about him being competitive and tough, and he's got more toughness than a lot of 225-pound receivers. It also helps him that there's no track record here of major injury. He started double-digit games each of the last 3 years. So there's not a medical background to match the lack of size. And so I tell you, some team in the mid-first round is going to get a pretty good value. Is ultimately what's going to happen with Devontae Smith. Whether that could be the Cardinals at 16, I don't. Like you said, we'll go into that a little more. Today's episode, we're really going to focus on some of those prop bets and kind of have fun with it and discuss these different options. I'm sure we'll agree on some, maybe disagree on others, and then we'll get into some fan questions. Had a call out earlier today on Twitter. Got a lot of good questions. Obviously, won't be able to get to a handful of them or so, but let's dive right into it. Lance, let's start with the prop bets. Where you want to start?
Well, okay, so we're going to use BetMGM. It's one of the new partners, along with FanDuel and DraftKings, for the NFL's big. And I know you guys use BetMGM. Yeah. This is my first time looking at the site. There's a lot of they got a lot of great stuff here: NFL awards, team season specials, division, conference. So we're going to use The Athletic. It's the NFL's, so they're a big partner of the NFL now in that $1 billion partnership. I think I saw that was the number. And of course, they're rolling with The Athletic, so we will use that as well. And I like, and most of these numbers are pretty similar to what I'm seeing on the other sites as well. So these are actually, if you're in a state where you can do this, these are available to you right now. So too bad Dane doesn't have some type of special code called the Beast or something like that, where you get 25% addition into your account.
You need to talk to somebody about that.
Yeah, exactly. You need to get that going. I do radio. I know that. You got a call to action. You got your own personal code. They can track it that way. And then the user gets a special advantage. So Trevor Lawrence is a huge favorite. Is minus 10,000, which means everything is based on a $100 wager. So if it says minus, let's talk about that for a second to help you understand this. So if it says minus 150, that means you have to bet 150 to win 100. If it's plus 150, that means you bet 100 to win 150. So when Trevor Lawrence is minus 10,000, that means, if you really think it's free money, and it certainly feels like it, let's say you wanted to make $500 on Trevor Lawrence, as long as you put up $50,000, you can get your $500. Now, most people probably would not do that, but there are stories about that that happen every year, Dame, where people say, this is a lock. And I would have to say this is, I don't know that there's anything that could keep Lawrence. I mean, even a big gas mask like a la Laramie Tunsil, I don't think there's anything short of some kind of catastrophic injury that could keep Lawrence from going one.
Yeah, he already has the playbook, right? I mean, he's already...
it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it is fascinating. Jaguar fans were sending him in his new bride wedding gifts, a lot of stuff. So they're having fun with it. But yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet. Sure, yeah, if you want to make $500 and put $50,000 on the line, then more power to you. But
so, well, basically, I just wanted to explain that. Right, now, the next one is Zach Wilson, right? Pretty much locked in. I think you're the first person I heard talk about Zach as the number two quarterback ahead of Justin Fields, and you did that fairly early during the season. Zach Wilson is minus 2,500, so you'd have to bet $2,500 to win 100. That's pretty sporty. Now, maybe people would say it's as big a lock as Trevor Lawrence, so why not do this one at the discounted rate? There was something that came out today that there's an AFC executive who believes that this is not locked in necessarily with Zach Wilson. I'll just say if it's not Zach Wilson, then it would be a player like Kyle Pitts or Ja'Marr Chase. That's the only thing I could think of. But now you don't have your quarterback. You traded off Sam Darnold. So I really don't understand. I mean, unless you went with another quarterback. And I guess that's why Justin Fields is the second on the board at plus 1,600, Trey Lance plus 3,000. Do you see any potential for Zach Wilson not to be the second pick?
I mean, it would go against everything we're hearing. Spending a lot of time on the phone, these last few days up until the draft. Everyone in the industry is acting like he's going to be the pick. There's nothing that I've heard that is contrary to that. And Nothing. The words safe and consensus and lock, they're just the words that shouldn't be used in any NFL draft conversation, as we know. So you'd never say never, but it would be a humongous shock, especially at this point. There's a reason why, Kyle Shanahan did a second pro day with Mac Jones, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance, but didn't even bother with Zach Wilson. So, I think it's pretty safe bet he'll be that number two pick, at least based on what we know. I'm interested, though, with these other three quarterbacks. That's where it gets really juicy.
Yeah, and here's the one that everyone – and I followed the odds on this out of curiosity. Yeah. I followed this. Mac Jones went from being – so it really wasn't – there weren't a lot of odds about the number three pick before mid-March. And Mac Jones, all of a sudden, after all the heat with Mac Jones came out, he opened up a favorite. Not a big favorite, but a favorite nonetheless. Then Justin Fields had a second pro day, and all the people on TV are talking about Justin Fields is the best, Justin Fields is great, Justin Fields. And Justin Fields, all of a sudden, he became the favorite. Then Trey Lance had his second pro day, and in some places, Trey Lance's number came down, even though he's an underdog of the three. It came down to where you weren't getting the same value. So let me give you what BetMGM has and see what you think. Mac Jones is -160, means you got to bet 160 to win 100. Justin Fields is +135, 100 to win 135. Trey Lance +500. Now, is there any value in Trey Lance, who I think fits them perfectly, and they do have a quarterback in place? Do you think there's any value in Trey Lance at +500? Because if not, it comes down to who do you like better here, Jones with the early heat or Justin Fields, who has had, who had the 49ers go to his second pro day?
This is just my opinion, but based off of just my conversations, I'd be surprised if Justin Fields is the pick. And it's funny, it seems like some of these odds swing along with Twitter and, just the loudest voices out there. And so after Fields' pro day, he started to gain a little momentum, and the Vegas odds reflected that. But none of those voices, the only people telling me that Fields at number three is Twitter. No one else is, no one in the league is saying that. Now, you don't rule out anything because, obviously Shanahan went to Columbus for a reason, went to that second pro day for a reason. And I think they're being very coy with what they're actually going to do, what their intentions are. So you don't rule it out, but of those three quarterbacks, I would be the most surprised if Fields were the pick. And I think Mac Jones is still the favorite, but I keep coming back to Trey Lance. When the draft, that trade went down, Trey Lance was the first name that entered my mind as,
same boom. Here.
Yeah, that love the fit. It makes sense just with the setup of that offense and what Kyle Shanahan wants at the quarterback position. So I still think at right now with what we know, Mac Jones seems to still be the favorite. But Trey Lance is the one that I keep coming back to as I wouldn't be shocked at all if he would be the pick.
No, at 500, that +500, 100 win 500. That's
interesting.
Those are good odds for Trey Lance, even if you wanted to take a little nibble. But I would agree with you. I think this number is pretty solid on Mac Jones. By the way, Justin, I guess I need to throw this out there. I started back, way back in the day, I started into the sports business with my own handicapping business. So I was 24, doing it out of my own kitchen in my apartment, had a second phone line put in, had a couple invites out to the Stardust to do some handicapping contests out at the Stardust Sportsbook way back in the day.
I wish I knew 24-year-old Lance Zierlein.
Yeah,
that would have been.
I'm sitting here giving out picks in my kitchen of an apartment, and I've got to do that every day during basketball and baseball. And so the amount of the amount of nervousness when you have to answer a phone after a losing streak, you live and die with all that. But I was. You know what it did, Dane, just very quickly? It helped me to become much more analytical because when you are doing that and you're doing that, and that was my living at the time. I quit a job, a full-time job that I had that paid terrible and I hated it. It had nothing to do with sports. And this was my dream that I knew that was a side door for me to potentially get into sports radio. And I was a big fan of all sports. But it really does help you to become analytical in terms of figuring out the pieces of the puzzle. How much better is Team A versus Team B? What goes into it? Is it emotion? Is it skill? Are there matchups? And it really forces you, if you have too much of an opinion and you're not objective, then you will get buried. You have to be objective. You have to be prepared to humble yourself after you lose. And it helps you, and it helped me with sports talk radio for the next two decades. It helps me with my draft stuff, I think, because you just have to humble yourself and not have an opinion. You have to start with a clean slate. And I think that's what, you know, the handicapping did for me. It was really about figuring out a puzzle. It was less about wagering. It was more about figuring out how a puzzle plays out. And that's why when I sit there and I look at Trey Lance at plus 500, I mean, that's value. Honestly, that's value at the number three pick because he's such a good fit there. Now, the first wide receiver drafted, I think we would both say Ja'Marr Chase. That's not going to be a big deal. But let me ask you this one. This is a tough one. Who do you think is the second wide receiver drafted, Waddle or Smith?
I think it is Waddle. I think that I know that Smith is wide receiver two for a few teams, but those teams aren't picking in the top 15. And so I don't know how every team in the top 15 feels, but I would lean Waddle between the two. What are the betting odds on those two receivers?
Well, there's not a particular – well, we'll get to where they are over-unders in a second. Okay. I was just curious. But let me move on. First running back drafted. See, I think they've got the wrong favorite here, and I've thought this the entire time. Najee Harris is minus 140. And I've seen him higher in the past. And Travis Etienne is plus 165. Javonte Williams plus 600. I wouldn't completely rule out Javonte. It's only those three. They've got other names on BetMGM. They shouldn't because it's going to be one of those three.
That Javonte Williams, that's not bad.
He's a curious name because everybody likes him. I didn't talk to a running back coach that doesn't really like Javonte Williams. They loved him on Zoom. They said he had tremendous interviews, tremendous football and personal character. They say the same thing about his teammate, Michael Carter. They love him too. They love both the kids. I feel like Etienne, though, for me, at plus 165, I kind of feel like, based on the people I've talked to around the league, I kind of feel like Etienne maybe would be a small favorite for me over Harris.
So it's interesting because you have to, with running backs, you look at landing spots. 24 makes the most sense for a running back in the first round. Is there any other landing spots that you think makes a ton of sense for some of these running backs?
18 possibly Miami. With the Dolphins, especially if they traded back. And I'll tell you why. I know the analytics guys go crazy when you talk about that, but the reality is when you have two picks in the first round and you can lock in a running back to a 5-year deal, that's a really big deal. You go five and then you go that sixth year on a you know, if you want to lock in that sixth year on a franchise tag, 6 years for a really good running back, and then you bail and you move on to the next guy and you avoid the second contract, I think it's tremendous value. And I think people need to start considering that because it's the second contract that's the one that becomes problematic for teams. It's not the first. And so I'd rather have not only the additional year, but the potential to franchise a guy too. It's really two extra years for the running back. That's why I would take a running back. If I had two picks in the first, and if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, for example, I think you have to consider that. But we'll get to that here in a second. First, offensive line drafted. Penei Sewell, minus 500. Rashawn Slater, plus 250. I don't think it's going to be anyone other than those two. That seems like – does that seem a little much, 500 to win 100 on Sewell? What kind of chance do you give Slater for upsetting Sewell as the first offensive lineman?
I think that Sewell, it's fair to call him the favorite. I think that's makes sense. But there's plenty of teams that like Slater. Someone asked me about this the other day, and I said, you know, Slater's got a much better chance of being the first offensive lineman drafted rather than the third offensive lineman drafted. Yes. So, you know, where, you know, what does Carolina think at eight, number eight, Dallas at 10? We can't completely rule out offensive line at five with the Bengals. So I would be surprised just because with Sewell, everything that he offers at 20 years old, that might be the trump card, but it wouldn't be the most shocking thing if Slater ended up being the first offensive lineman drafted.
How about, I would go first defensive lineman drafted, but I want to see about getting first defensive player drafted. So let me pull that one up quickly because I think that one, to me, I have seen this one.
Sertan's got to be the leading favorite, right?
Sertan is minus 130. It's a very reasonable number for Sertan in terms of
Who's two, Horn?
Let's see. Number two is Micah Parsons at plus 175. Horn was like 350. Quiddy Pay was 500. I thought Quiddy Pay. I think Quiddy Pay is a very live dog in that particular scenario if it's not Horn. I think Horn is going to be the guy. But for example, here, first defensive lineman drafted, BetMGM has Quiddy minus 225. They have Jalen Phillips plus 225. And then they have Rousseau plus 900, which is not going to happen. And then they have Barmore plus 900. So what they're saying is Quiddy versus Jalen Phillips. I think Quiddy at minus 225 feels like a very strong locked-in selection for me as first D lineman drafted. But I think he's an interesting underdog to be first defensive player drafted.
That is interesting. See, to me, the one that stood out was Horn. I think that when you look at Dallas at 10, that seems like the most likely where the first defensive player is going to be drafted. Maybe Carolina at 8, they need corner help, but more than likely 10.
Here it is. I've got it on BetMGM.
Okay.
Joe Horn. J.C. Horn, rather, plus 700. They've got Quiddy Pay plus 500. J.C. Horn plus 700, and they've got Sertan minus 120.
See, if Dallas preferred Horn over Sertan, would that be the most shocking thing in the world? I don't think so.
No.
You know,
no, like, I don't think it would be that shocking.
So, I mean, that's to me, that'd be the one that's the most intriguing. I don't think Pay's going 10. That would be surprising to me. But I do think once we start at 11, 12, and then some of those other picks in the teens, that's where we could start to see some of these defensive linemen off the board. 14 with Minnesota. So, you know, if somehow one of the offensive linemen is still there and the Cowboys decide to go that route, which I still think they're going corner at 10. But just for hypothetical reasons, let's say, you know, Slater goes 10 to the Cowboys and the Giants are picking at 11, then, you know, we know how Dave Gettleman wants to, you know, he loves pass rushers, and the chance to add one here at 11 is you can't rule it out. And we know Howie Roseman at 12, how much, you know, that factors into building through the trenches, how much that matters to them. So that's interesting with Quiddy Pay.
Yeah, this one is really curious to me. First linebacker drafted. Now, keep in mind now, they're using outside linebackers too. So let me throw these at you. Micah Parsons, minus 400. Owusu-Koramoah, plus 650. Ojulari, plus 900. Jamin Davis, 1,100, you know, plus 1,100. That's 100 to win 1,100. And then Zaven Collins, plus 1,400. This is the one to me which is curious because I understand the talent of Micah Parsons. There are some concerns, though, about the personality. There just are. And the question becomes, is this going to be a big slip for him or not that much of a slip? I think he's a top seven player in this draft.
Talent-wise, right.
Talent-wise, no question. But would it be crazy to think somebody really loves Owusu-Koramoah as the guy that Jabril Peppers is what they hope Jabril Peppers would be? Here's the actual incarnation is Owusu-Koramoah. Is it crazy to think that Zaven Collins, with his size and speed at plus 1,400? He's a Belichick-type guy.
Exactly. By the way, did you see Breer tweeted that he was at 270 at his medical, which I don't know what to do. Yeah, I don't know what to do with that. That was pretty surprising. He was already at 6'5", 260, already an oversized linebacker. If he's at 270, hopefully is by design, first of all. You know, if he's trying to, you know, if he got feedback saying maybe moved edge rusher or something like that. But I don't even know what to do with that number. That was the most, not the 166 for Devontae Smith, the 270 for Zaven Collins. That was the most shocking
number.
Dude,
he weighs 100 pounds more than Devontae Smith.
Yeah.
Zaven Collins weighs 100 pounds more than Devontae Smith. That just flashed to me. And there might be certain coverages where he has to drag him from the slot into the, you know, like up the seam, potentially.
Right, yeah. Advantage Devontae Smith. In my mock draft, in my seven-round mock, I had Zaven Collins as the first linebacker off the board at number 15, just because he fits Belichick what he wants to do on defense with the versatility and the athleticism. But if he's 270, that's maybe have a different conversation.
Let me go through some of the over-unders for these particular players. I'll just do a couple quick running backs over under, over 0.5, minus 225, under 0.5, which basically means running back drafted minus 225, no running back drafted plus 175. I'd say running back drafted.
Yeah, I would lean that way as well. Just because this, if not for the Steelers, I might go on the under. But the Steelers just feel like with their window, with all the research they've done in this running back class, it just feels like they're poised to take one at 24. At least there's a high chance they do. And so because of that, I would take the over as well.
Total wide receivers drafted in round one. Over 4.5 is minus 250. That's 250 to 100. Under is 4.5. Under 4.5 is plus 190. So we've got the top three that we know about. Who's number four? Who's the fourth one off the board? And do you see it going over or under? I could make an argument that it could go under and stick at four.
Yeah, and there's some, Rashad Bateman, there's a lot of split opinion about. I think he'd be perfect with the Ravens in the late first. I love that fit. Elijah Moore has got fans. I gave him to the Jaguars in my mock draft. Just Urban Meyer, speed, speed, speed. So I think there is a route for more than four receivers to be drafted in the first round, but I don't know that I would call it likely. That's tough. Terrace Marshall's got a knee. That's an issue, something that's popped up with teams. So I don't know that he's in that conversation. Who else? Kadarius Toney. He's my fourth receiver. I don't expect him to be the fourth receiver drafted, though. So I think that the betting odds would say under, but I could see a clear path where it would be maybe five receivers in the first.
All right, here you go. Over under for, then you think, Kadarius Toney. Over unders 27.5. Now that's a that's a 160 favorite, so it's a pretty good favorite. I think that's over, right?
I think so too. He's a really good player, but he's a little bit of a gadget guy. The off field stuff, I don't know how much that's going to bother some teams. I think I'm taking the over on that one.
Dane, I think you're going to make people excited about this one. Justin Fields, draft position, 4.5. If you say over 4.5, which plays into what you said previously about San Francisco not taking Justin, and then if the Falcons either don't take him or don't trade to a team who wants to take him, then that's a winner, and that's plus 160. Over under 4.5.
Yeah, there's a reason they went 4.5 here and not 3.5. And I think because Atlanta is really tough to figure out. First-year head coach, first-year general manager. They've got Matt Ryan in the fold for probably at least 2 years. You can make an argument that they should go Kyle Pitts. You can make an argument they should trade out of here. You can make the argument they should go quarterback. So and especially with Justin Fields being a local quarterback, that shouldn't really factor into the decision. But it's something that could sweeten the pot a little bit, just in terms of the fan base. So you can't completely rule it out at four, just because I don't think we have a great read on what Atlanta's going to do, and especially if they trade out of there. But I would say, I would argue that is a team really need to trade up to four to get the quarterback? I think they could. Because you don't think that the Bengals are going to take a quarterback or trade out. You don't think that the Dolphins at six are going to take a quarterback or trade out. So I think the landing spot, if you're the Patriots or one of these teams that's maybe looking to trade up to get a quarterback, you're eyeing the Lions at number seven.
Carolina, if you want to play chicken with the Lions. Yeah,
right. You're eyeing seven or eight to go up and get your guy. I don't know that you necessarily have to go up to four. So I'd be surprised if Fields went in the top four. I'd be taking over on that, but crazier things have happened.
Do you feel confident that Penei Sewell goes under 6.5 on Penei Sewell is the favorite? I don't like it. I like over.
No, yeah, I kind of like the over there. I do think that Penei Sewell is in the discussion there at number five. I still think that that's a possibility, but if this was 7.5, I think I'd like the under.
I think Penei Sewell could slip into the 10 range or above. I really do. I think first tackle could slip all the way that far. I think there's a chance for that based on cornerback. Maybe, you got to think, okay, what's the positions? Well, four pass catchers, 4 to 5 quarterbacks, and then you've got a corner in Horn or Surtain. That would put it at 10. before you even get to an offensive lineman. So I think there's an outside chance that he could fall that far, and that's why I think that's an interesting over 6.5. I mean, I think it could be potentially over 7.5 and maybe even over 8. But Surtain is a tough one here to me. Over under 10.5. They're basically saying, does Dallas take him?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's which I've been told that, you know, corner is definitely the favorite, and that tackle is kind of on the outside looking in with every other position.
Yeah.
So I'd be surprised, even though you look at it and, you know, Tyron's not getting any younger and Lael Collins coming off a major injury. But I think that they're in a position where, you know, they need corner help badly, and that might be the what ultimately forces their hand there at 10.
Well, Tane, I think you – so the Cowboys have what, their regular second-round pick, right?
Yes.
So you also have to factor – yeah, yeah. So you also have to factor this in when you're trying to put somebody – because, look, we're talking about prop bets, but this is also mock draft slotting as well.
Right.
If you're looking at what the Cowboys could do, you say to yourself, okay, oh, man, Penei Sewell's there, Rashawn Slater's there. And I've done this already where I've had Slater and Sewell to those guys, where I had Sewell in my first draft there, I had Slater in my second. And you say to yourself, well, they really need this for all the reasons that you laid out. But then the second thing you do is you say, okay, what's a better combination? Surtain or Horn there plus Sam Cosmi or Dylan Reduns or Liam Eichenberg or whoever you want to start to project in that neighborhood? Or is it better to go and then you have to do your tackle and then your corner? I actually think corner one, tackle second round is probably the better player combination if I had to guess.
And see, and this is a fantastic debate about strategy and how you look at it, because, and this is something I think, you know, we'll be talking about with Robert Mays on next week's show, just when we go into different theories and the way you attack the draft. But I would argue that you don't let a pick 30 picks away dictate who you draft in the top 10.
That's,
you
know,
like, that would be my argument to that. But I wholeheartedly agree that you want to come away with the two best players as opposed to, you know, one player that you feel really good about, one player that you're not feeling great about, that you feel like is a little forced because you wanted to get that position. You'd rather feel really good about both players. And so you can't help but project forward a little bit, and who's going to be, you know, what's this deeper position where who's going to be there for you in the next round. And I think it's okay to do that, maybe more towards like when you're in the second round and you're debating between two positions, looking at the third round and all that. But when you're picking top 10, I would argue you take the best player on your board, and then you worry about getting your whatever position next in the second round. But it's a great conversation to have about the right way to do it, or the best practices.
So we know the Giants would like to add a playmaker at 11. We've also heard that they may move out of there. That leads me to this question. Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle, their over-unders and their odds are both exactly the same. It's basically a pick 'em on the over, pick 'em on the under, and they're both at 11.5. So they both could be taken under 11.5. They could both go under. Do you see that happening? Would you say under? I think you'd say under on Waddle based on our conversations, under 11.5. Would you also say under on Devontae Smith, or do you think he goes over?
I think he goes over. And
I kind of, you know, do too.
And with the Giants, adding Kenny Golladay, I think that has to change your thinking a little bit, right? I mean, adding Kenny Golladay in free agency, you know, you have Darius Slayton, who's a good player. Sterling Shepard, still a good player. You know, I think they have their wide receivers set where it's not a, you know, I'm sure they'd like to have one of those guys, you know, Jaylen Waddle or Smith, but it's not where it's a place where I don't think they have to go in that direction if they wanted to go corner or pass rusher or even an offensive lineman, just keep building on the offensive line with a Vera Tucker at guard. So it's a really interesting spot at 11. And we know Gettleman doesn't trade back. I mean, he's never done it before. Could it happen this year? Sure. You never rule it out, but he's never traded back in the first round. So 11's interesting. And it just seems like wide receiver seemed like a really strong possibility in January. But after the Golladay signing, I'm not so sure. Smith, I'm taking the over on that.
Okay. Two more on this front, and we'll switch to one other. But Elijah Vera Tucker, over under 17.5. The under is minus 140. Now, the only reason that I could see this potentially going over is because of the short arms. But he's been inside that offensive line sweet spot of 13, 14. There's been a lot of projections with him at 13, 14. I don't think New England would go with him at 15. However, what if they flip into the first round and let's say they move with Carolina and move to number 8? Well, then all of a sudden you could be looking at Carolina looking at a tackle, because that's one of the positions, you know, they could consider.
Do you think a team would draft Vera Tucker to play tackle?
I think that they could draft him with the idea that they are going to give him a shot at tackle. Not at left tackle, but probably right tackle. And so, you know, my dad worked with Elijah Vera Tucker. He's worked with Eichenberg, Hainsey, David Moore from Grambling, Elijah Vera Tucker, Jalen Moore, who he kind of sought out Jalen. He was that big a fan after watching him on the Senior Bowl tape. And he worked with him for 2 or 3 days. And I think he's going to do some work with Hymus. He's going to work with him here coming up soon.
It's my pretty dad good player out of Nebraska.
I like him. He's a guard. I think he's a tackle. He's a swing tackle who's got a chance to play some guard. I gave him a 59, a high 59, which is a solid backup. I think he's a good NFL swing who can get you some starting reps if you need. Athletic, can recover. So, yeah.
I don't think he gets into like top 100 range, but once you get into day three, I would feel comfortable. I would feel comfortable taking him basically anywhere on day three once you get to that point.
I would too. I think four is the early side. I think five would be a small favorite. But once you get with offensive linemen, you know, and if there's a run, everyone's getting pushed up a full round. But I do think Elijah Vera Tucker, we talked about it, and the arm length, you know, he's a longtime offensive line coach in the NFL, college, won a Super Bowl at the Steelers. He had Max Starks, but he had Willie Colon, who was a shorter tackle, or much shorter tackle than usual, but he also had longer arms than Vera Tucker. But the thing is with Vera Tucker, my dad told me, with Vera Tucker, and I've told some teams this who have asked me about what my dad thought of him. He said, you know, when your hands are that inside and efficient, and when they are as well-timed as his, and then you've got the body control, the balance, the core strength, you've got a chance to play tackle. Now, you've got to be really good with their hands, and you have to learn some of the sneaky, you know, flash your hands. You're going to have to learn how to be a good hand fighter and get people's hands displaced with some of your own, you know, karate hands, judo hands, whatever the case may be. But I don't think it's crazy to think Vera Tucker could get a look at tackle, Dane. I really don't. And and I don't know if I think he's athletic enough to do it at left. I think I would probably draft him with the idea that we're going to try him at tackle. And if we don't like it, we'll move him to guard, which is one of the reasons I like him at Minnesota. Because Minnesota has a need at tackle and they got a need at guard. And to me, he's a good football player, good football character. I feel like you get a guy who can block, and Minnesota needs a guy who can block. So I don't get as bogged down with the position.
Right, and they drafted Ezra Cleveland in the second round last year, who, you know, played some guard, but I think they view him left tackle material, or, you know, outside at tackle. So you bring in a Vera Tucker who maybe is your guard, and Cleveland's back outside. And if you have to reevaluate that in training camp or down the road, then you do so. But two guys that have experience at both spots, that's interesting. And I always find it interesting where the over-under, the number that it is, okay, who's picking at that number? So 17.5, the Raiders picking at 17, they need help on the offensive line, especially at right tackle. So that's always interesting, you know, why they pick a specific number.
Yeah, and the other thing would be, you know, if I told you who do you like here, well, so if Elijah Vera Tucker is not a tackle, if teams say, boy, we like that tackle tape, but 32.5 just misses our standards, so we're not going to project him as a tackle, we're moving him to our guard board. It is going to be curious to see if that pushes them down the draft board, because there are some teams who fundamentally do not believe in taking a guard in the first round even. Some don't believe in taking them in the first round, and certainly not in the top 20 picks. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. This is a guy, to me, who, okay, I've seen him lower than this number, and it's Jalen Phillips from Miami. The over-under they have here, the unders, it's 26.5, but you got to lay minus 225 to win 100. And the over is 100 to win 170 on over 26.5. Now, I think this is a really difficult one because he's clearly very talented. But once you start talking about concussions, once you start talking about questions about does he love the sport, you know, all this stuff that's out there with some teams, and this is not two media guys talking, this is NFL conversations that are taking place, just so you know. I think that is a really tough one to project. I think they put a pretty good number on it, to be honest with you, at the back end of the first. But what do you think on that one?
I was going to say the two players that honestly I would just stay away from because I have no clue is Jalen Phillips and Caleb Farley. Like I have, because they're injury related, because they're pretty serious injury related, with Farley, it's the back, with Phillips, it's the concussions. Yeah, like you mentioned, Phillips also has, you know, some of the off field stuff, just, you know, how much he loves music, how that's his first love. And, you know, is he going to be all about football? Just stuff like that. You know, it's talked about. So I personally would not feel comfortable, you know, making any type of bet on those two guys because I wouldn't be surprised either way. Jalen Phillips could go 14, he could go 44. I wouldn't be surprised at either one of those outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, 44 would absolutely be a nod to the medical concerns, though.
Right,
exactly. And probably concussion. I doubt it has anything to do with the wrist he had. I think it would be a concussion thing. First player, offensive or defensive player? Okay, for the Cowboys. Defense, -450. Offense, -325. I mean, isn't that a little sporty? Plus 325 when tackle? When you just talked about tackle being a potential in play for them?
Yeah, that is.
What if Quiddy Pay goes, not Quiddy Pay, but what if Sertan goes early? What if Sertan ends up going to
Carolina?
I don't know, Carolina. Let's say he goes to Carolina, and now Penei Sewell is still on the board. And then Denver goes quarterback. Mm-hmm. Let's say Trey Lance goes number 9. And now we've got Rashawn Slater, J.C. Horn, and Penei Sewell. I mean, that's an interesting number there.
Yeah, it is. And look, the Cowboys have done a ton of work on these corners, and I think they like both Sertan and Horn. But with Sewell staring you in the face, that's tough. Now, they didn't, to my knowledge, they didn't send a large. Well, the coaches they sent to Oregon's Pro Day was actually on the defensive side. So, looking at Javon Holland probably. But I don't know if that's more they just don't see Sewell lasting there to 10. But if you did, that, I mean, it's almost like the perfect, you know, you drafted Tyron Smith when he was 20 years old and he was the guy for you the last 12 years or so. Could be a similar, passing of the baton to a guy like Penei Sewell with the type of ability that he has at such a young age. That would be tough to pass on. So that's an interesting one.
Oh, last really quick one for you. The over-under on Alabama players first round was 5.5.
Okay. Well, we know that Mac Jones, Sertan are going.
Both wide receivers.
So that's 4.
So and now you've got Najee Harris and Christian Barmore are the two wild cards.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say
Leatherwood, if you want to throw Leatherwood in there, I guess.
Leatherwood and Dickerson, I don't think so. Just get the medicals, but
yeah, well, yeah, I guess,
you know, if he went to the Packers or the Chiefs, and you know, one of the final picks of the first round, it wouldn't be a complete shock. So he's in that mix as well. That's oof. I don't know. I'm surprised Barmore isn't talked about more as like a top 25 guy. You know, like
I think we'll get into the mailbag here, but yeah. I got a feeling Christian Barmore is about to be one of my answers on our mailbag question. So I'll save it.
Yeah. I mean, so you kind of get the feeling over, right?
I would. Yeah. Well, 5.5. So we mentioned the four
and then Najee Harris.
And then even if it's Najee, and then you'd have to have Landon Dickerson, Barmore, or Leatherwood. Yeah, that gives you a lot to play. That gives you a lot of room to maneuver. I would say over. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Georgia had something similar last year, and Isaiah Wilson ended up putting it over.
Poor Titans.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? we've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's get to this mailbag here. A lot of great questions. Can't get to all of them, obviously, but we'll get through a few of these here. From Kevin on Twitter, name three prospects that you consider a dark horse candidate to squeeze into the first round that you don't see projected often. He threw out there Ifeatu Melifonwu, Levi Onwuzurike, and Davis Mills as three options that could.
Those are all good. By the way, I like all three of those. I think those are all interesting picks. Let me throw two names out there. I'll go with Javonte Williams or Eric Stokes from Georgia.
Ooh, okay, Stokes. That's a good one. That's a name I've put in my first round mock before. You know, just kind of squeezing him in there. You know, you probably for this, a lot of the same reasons. Say Tyson Campbell. Another guy that I think doesn't get talked about a ton as a first round player, but I think it wouldn't be a shock if he goes there, is Joe Tryon, the pass rusher from Washington.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, and you match up his testing numbers, his size and measurables to Marcus Davenport, who's a top 15 pick 3 years ago. It's very, very similar. And, you know, Davenport hasn't exactly lived up to where he was drafted, especially the trade up. But it's not going to stop NFL teams from taking swings on pass rushers with those type of traits. So Tryon, I grade it as a late one, early two. If he goes, you know, 32, 30, it wouldn't be a huge surprise to me. So I think he's in that mix. Who else we got here? Onwuzurike would be a little bit of a surprise. I know he's got some injury stuff. The fact that this is such a bad defensive tackle class, though, that might push up Barmore and Onwuzurike. That's possible.
I don't think Nick Bolton sneaks in there.
I don't either.
One other name that it's kind of going to get into, I'll throw another little sneaky name at you. And I know people are going to say no, and that's fine. But he's going to go higher than people think, and that's Milton Williams from Louisiana Tech.
Mm, yeah, he's interesting. I mean, he's a projection because...
He's a projection, and he's a defensive tackle. And if Barmore... You know, there are some teams who don't like the makeup on Barmore. That's what I've been told directly, is that there's makeup stuff that they don't love about him.
Right.
And if Barmore falls, and this is not a good defensive tackle draft, and all of a sudden here comes this guy who tested like Aaron Donald, who's got tremendous physical strength. He's got shorter arms. I'm just telling you, Milton Williams is a sneaky guy to keep your eye on. If you want a guy to be like, wait, what? Where did that come from? Yeah. Milton Williams would certainly fall into that category in terms of if I told you he went in the first round. I bet you'd say, whoa, I didn't see this coming.
Our buddy Fran Duffy, he threw out the Malik Jackson comp for him, which makes sense. And he's still just figuring things out. You know, he's probably, 15 pounds heavier now than he was on tape during the season. So you kind of wonder, okay, what's his ideal playing weight? You know, where is he? You know, what's his ideal spot for us, his ideal role? And so first round seems a little rich, but, especially in this class, you don't completely rule it out. That is an interesting one. And I would look at these offensive tackles. I think that Slater and Sewell are going to be the first two drafted. And then you get so many differing opinions around the league on tackles 3 through 8. You know, some are Darisaw guys, some are in on Tevin Jenkins, some are out on Tevin Jenkins.
Right.
You know, Leatherwood has fans as at tackle in the first round. Sam Cosmi is another one in that conversation. So I would say the surprise being maybe just the order of these offensive tackles in that late first, maybe surprising some people. in the order they come off the board.
Eichenberg could be a surprise. I mean, let's face it. Kansas City is super desperate for offensive line. So if they reach, you could find some offensive linemen there who you say, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Now, Dane, in the mailbag, the next question from Draft Mockery DAL is, who is a player that is a consistent first rounder in mock drafts that will go lower than anticipated?
So the opposite of the first question, basically.
So the basically, or how about a guy that people think is going in the first but is not? Now, I put a tweet out there. Let me acknowledge this. I was looking at a mock draft, and this is a reputable mainstream entity. And there was a mock draft where I saw some names in there, and I'm not going to say the names right now, but I think this year, I've never seen this before. If you go back and look at people's mock drafts in January, and then you go back or early February, and then you go look at them in April, there are some substantial differences because either they get more information or they talk to teams or maybe they've just been, because this happens too. It's just a copycat effect where guys will all say a name on there and everyone says this name. People just keep doing it until that name stops getting the same heat. And then all of a sudden that name just slowly slides out of the first. I was surprised at one or two of the names that this group still had in the first round. And this late in the process, when I know a lot of teams have third round grades on this guy, and I really feel like this is going to be the year more than any other where people are going to be a little surprised based on what the group think has been and what draft media has been saying versus what the teams think. And I had a college personnel guy tell me he has never in his career of college football had so many executives reach out to him to get information directly because scouts, who are usually the boots on the ground to get the personal information on these players, because they haven't had the same access, the big decision makers are going directly to these schools and talking directly. And I think that is going to have a big impact on this draft in a subtle way, but you understand what I'm talking about. A player's personal character, their football character, how much they love it, they can be – these voices inside those college buildings can sway this a great deal this year, more so than usual.
Right, exactly. So who's your answer there for that? A consensus first rounder, who's going to go lower than anticipated?
If I said consensus, I'd say Caleb Farley is the easy one. Yeah. Because of the injury. I even had him in my first round mock draft, but I think once you go through all these injuries, I think there's a much better chance than not that Farley slips out of the first. Landon Dickerson for the same reason. Yeah. I would say if we're talking about, and I think Terrace Marshall is not going to be a first rounder either.
Yeah, agree with all those. Gregor Rousseau, to me, is the one. Yep. That, and you know, Drew Rosenhaus's agent tweeted today how several teams have told him that in the first they're gonna look to pick Rousseau, and take that for however you want. But right. With all
and then Google Willis McGahee, Drew Rosenhaus on YouTube, and then go watch how that thing. Remember when McGahee had the injuries, and Drew said, I single handedly tricked NFL teams into taking him in the first round, even though he had an ACL injury, with the way that he pumped the kid up. And Drew actually did an amazing job, Frank.
You could go back to Warren Sapp and how that played out in that draft and the part that Drew played and how that all happened. But like with Rousseau, I mean, there's plenty of intrigue with him. He's long. He's got good get off. He's really productive in 2019. Those are the high points. But when you factor in that not all the athletic testing was impressive, basically we have 1 year of film of him on the field after opting out of this year and missing all of his first season at Miami. I just think that there's a very plausible scenario where he ends up going in the 33 to 40 range as opposed to in that first round. I mean, I think that's very realistic to see that happen.
This is a good question that I'm going to turn this one to you because I know you do a lot of digging around on personal backgrounds. And AJ Digby asked, who's the feel-good story in the draft this year? I'll get to the second part of his question. Who do you think the feel-good story of the draft is this year that you can think of?
Well, the one that immediately stands out has got to be Quinn Meinerz. Being a sixth or seventh round pick and having your – I mean, think of it if you're Quinn Meinerz. You're in the summer – you are considered a possible draft pick for the upcoming draft class, and you're going into your final season, all of a sudden with the pandemic, your season's canceled. So you're like, oh crap, you know, what does that mean for me? I'm probably going to be undrafted now. And, you know, do I need to think about coming back next year for another season? And, you know, you're just trying to figure things out. He goes and works out with Duke Manyweather. He goes and works out with a few other trainers, gets his body right, gets in, gets coached up a little bit with some techniques, goes to the senior, but he declares for the draft, goes to the Senior Bowl, tears it up 3 days. And those 3 days are going to equate to a 6-round jump or a 5-round jump in where he's going to be drafted. So just we don't see that. This is a rare, rare occurrence, what he's been able to do throughout the draft process. So great story. I mean, I think he's the one that would certainly come to mind first as you know, a great story that's we're going to see a play out on draft weekend.
Yeah, it's not the feel-good, like, oh, heart-tugging thing. It's really just a cool story about a guy being self-made. And right. I think that's, you know, deserves a lot of the attention as well. His second question was, is there anyone you are hearing from teams that could be surprise early picks to the general fan? And he gave his name was Cleveland Farrell, which I don't remember that getting out at all. Like, that was a shock to everybody that I talked to. If there was a guy like that, that could be a sneaky early pick.
Like Slater going 5, or that would be a surprise.
I'd say Jamin Davis. Because when you look at the linebackers, you know, I think you can pick at some different. Jamin Davis is actually kind of clean from the athletic profile, production, all that stuff. I think Jamin Davis from Kentucky, who's starting to sneak into some first round mocks, he might be a guy that all of a sudden you're saying, oh, I didn't think the Patriots are going to take him at 15, or, you know, whoever the team may be. I'd say Davis is going to be mine at linebacker. He might be my surprise pick.
Yeah, that makes sense. That Cleveland Farrell pick was, especially because he was in the top 5, I think. I mean, that was so.
I think it was four
overall. Correctly. I think you're right. That was so just not what we were expecting in the first round. That was Mayock's first draft with the Raiders. And obviously, it has not worked out what they thought.
What'd you think of him when he came out? I was not a big Cleveland Farrell guy for the very reasons.
No.
He just didn't have a lot of juice off the.
That's it. Yeah, he was a safe pick, you know, and I think that's what you're, you know, low ceiling, high floor type of pass rusher where you felt like you knew what you're getting. You know, high character guy, can play the run. He was productive at Clemson, but the traits, and that's what you're drafting. You're drafting traits over production, and the traits, the athletic traits, just not enough to get you excited. So that was a surprise. I don't know that I have a good answer because it's, you know, some of these we've talked so much about, like, you know, if like a Kwity Paye were to sneak into the top 10, like, you know, that's at least something we've talked about before as a unlikely scenario, but something that's, you know, could happen. You know, maybe Jalen Phillips going in the top 15. You know, I think talent-wise says that he should, but we've talked so much about the medicals and the off-field that we've kind of conditioned ourselves to think that Phillips is just going to be there somewhere in the 20s or maybe even the 30s. But if he were to go in the top 15, I think that would shake some things up and maybe be a pretty big surprise that we weren't expecting. Next question here from Ralph Russo, who does a great job covering college football for the AP. And the great Andy Staples with The Athletic, he also had a similar question to this. So could roll them together. Who will be this year's needs to move inside, quote unquote, offensive lineman who ends up just fine at tackle? And he calls it the Isaiah Wynn Award. And he threw out there Alex Leatherwood and Liam Eikenberg. And I think starting with Rashawn Slater, that's where, you know, the conversation starts. Slater coming in just at 33-inch arms. There's a lot of draft boards around the league where he is a guard or a center on those boards. Some teams still view him as a tackle and say, you know, we'll let him fail there before we move him anywhere else. But, you know, I think it is similar to the Isaiah Wynn conversation with Rashawn Slater, just as a first-round player who, and you could even make the argument. I've had this conversation with Brandon Thorne, and this is a good thing I would love for you to weigh in on. If you feel like Rashawn Slater could be an A-plus guard or an A-tackle, what do you do? Do you
A-tackle.
You keep him outside of tackle.
Yeah, okay. I go
and
a tackle.
Right.
It's harder to find tackles. It's just, it's not easy.
Right. And that's what I would lean towards as well, even though his upside could be even higher. And it's almost like the Zach Martin conversation, who probably could play tackle in this league and play it at a Pro Bowl level or near Pro Bowl level, but inside a guard, you know, he's an all pro. So with Rashawn Slater, it maybe not to the ceiling or level of a Zach Martin, but it could be a similar conversation with him.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Vera Tucker. I mean, I kind of talked about this earlier, and he's a guy that most people believe need to play inside. You know, we could geek out and say, I would certainly give Leatherwood and Eichenberg a chance to fail at tackle before moving them to guard. Typically, you would for most players. There's some people who believe Sam Cosmi is a guard.
Yeah, 33-inch arms.
Yeah, and I think he could be okay as a tackle. But I will say, you know, his comp, one of the guys he really reminds me of a lot of times, is Connor Williams, and he did end up moving into guard from tackle where he was at University of Texas, and they both played the same position. So
what about Brady Christensen here? 32.25-inch arms, which is when you watch his film, you don't necessarily see length as a big detriment for him. Not that he faced a ton of high-level pass rushers. But 32.25 is pretty low, and that's something that, you know, Liam Eichenberg was 32.375.
Very low.
Another one that's pretty low. And, you know, we can say that length, you know, is arm length's overrated and all that, but at a certain point it matters. And
well, there's certain matchups where you'll get slaughtered. I mean, the guys who know, like Everson Griffin used to just mutilate people with his long arm stuff and his power. And if they're into you, if you got a power rusher who knows how to long arm a tackle, it is going to be a nightmare all game long.
Yeah,
you just can't. You just get a little rascaled, and you're just stuck there. It's probably a little dated, but it's probably a lot. It's even dated by me. I had to watch replays as a kid.
Yeah, but you'll little rascals. That's the name of my kid's t-ball team. So
is it really?
Yeah.
Let me flip it the other way. Guys who are tackles who I think have to go guard. I'll just to give you a little bonus here. I think Jackson Carman from Clemson is going to have to go guard. And I also think that Dylan Reduns, I think, eventually will move inside the guard. Now, I think Dylan Reduns has a chance to be a B to B-minus tackle, but a B-plus guard. And in that particular instance, once we start hitting those grades, I opt for the guard because I do think he's got drive strength as a run blocker. And I think the issues he has with his pass sets, where he kind of panics a little at the top and lunges and lets the edge get away from him, that concerns me. And I really have questions, Dane, about whether or not that's going to continue being an issue on the next level.
Yeah, Robert Hainsey, another one for me, who, you know, a college right tackle, but he's going
to
play.
Has to move inside.
Yeah, he has to move inside. Guard, center, either one of those spots, I think he actually could be fairly good. Maybe
we got totally geeked out here. I think Jalen Moore might be able to stay at tackle, even though he's 6'4". I think he's a guy that could end up staying at tackle from Western Michigan. If you guys are really into going that far into the draft, then that's certainly fine. And Tommy Doyle, another guy who I think could be a little bit of a surprise tackle, who may end up a starter in the future.
And I'd throw Hymus in there as well, who we talked about earlier from Nebraska.
Yeah.
A couple here real quick. If Atlanta doesn't draft QB at 4, who do you think is the best fit? This is from Nick on Twitter.
I'm just going to go with Kyle Pitts. I mean,
it's got to be.
Give me the spectacular playmaker. He's an upgraded Tony Gonzalez to pair with. And frankly, you can get away from Julio Jones if you want to get away from that contract. And now you're rolling with Russell Gage and you're rolling with Calvin Ridley. And then you got your big target. It may not be Julio Jones, but you got another big body that you can rely on. And so I think Kyle Pitts is the answer on that one.
You don't pass on special. That's what it just keeps coming back to. One more here from DeMario. Can you guys talk about late round or PFA prospects that you have a chance to become good players at their position? And he put in parentheses, not just special teams. But, you know, for a reason, special teams is a reason why you draft some of these guys in the later round. So it's a factor. You know, a guy like, you know, my guy, Jacob Harris out of UCF, the big slot receiver slash tight end. A guy that's going to be able to live on special teams while you try to develop him into a more of a defined role in offense. You know, he's a guy in the later rounds that I think could end up being something. Maybe a guy like Landon Young, the tackle from Kentucky, who it's a very up and down tape, but I think he has showed enough that maybe he could survive in the NFL as a quality player. So There's some interesting late round or guys that could end up sticking if they're in the right spot.
Yeah, and his specific question was, have a chance to become good players at their position. Okay, yeah, good players. So I'll give you one. Kwon Baker from South Alabama, wide receiver.
Wide receiver.
Who I think is going to go on to fifth. This guy had he had an official 1.49 10-yard split, which is pretty much unheard of. He's 200 pounds. He's 6 foot. He's like 6'1", 200 pounds, or 6 foot, 200 pounds. He ran in this low 4.4s. He jumped almost 40-inch vertical leap. He's got acceleration that is insane. And I know that there's some teams would like him to just, they don't even want me mentioning his name right now. But I would say Kwon Baker is one of those guys. I think Cam Sample from Tulane is a very intriguing day three later pick that could end up becoming a – especially if he gets moved in, if he's able to carry more weight and gets moved inside. I would say Shamar John Charles from Appalachian State, a cornerback, is another one that I really like a lot. Drew Dahlman. Now, you've heard that Drew Dahlman could go a lot earlier. I've got a fifth on him, but that obviously.
Put him in third.
Yeah. You put him in a third?
Yeah. I think you look at the 49ers there. That makes sense. Then
he doesn't fit into this. Another guy that I really liked on tape was Bryce Thompson, cornerback out of Tennessee. I thought
he's
he
got
was
some
really
off-field
instinctive.
Stuff, but yeah.
Oh, does he really?
But talent wise, is there.
And one guy. Oh, let me give you another good one. Let me go all the way to the sixth because there's always these guys in the sixth that I really end up liking a lot. There's some interesting safeties who really tested exceptionally
well. DeMar
Hamlin's
not a bad player?
No, I don't think he's – yeah, I don't think he's a bad player at all. I think he's very interesting. I think another one, running back coaches – I'll throw you a little bonus here. Two running back coaches singled this running back out. Brendan Knox from Marshall.
Marshall, yeah.
And I think he's more of a sixth round type.
Yep.
Michael Strachan from Charleston, wide receiver. That's a guy who I've gotten a six now, but I think he may go earlier than that. And then a guy who may go undrafted because of injury. Well, I don't know. Have you heard the latest on Jared Hocker? What's his deal? I know he quit on the bench. Is it just a tweak of the pec from Texas A&M?
I don't know. I was surprised when I saw the nine or whatever number it was, but then I saw the injury. So I'm not sure how serious that injury is. We have to figure that part out.
I think he has a chance to. I've got a starting grade. I've got a high backup to low end starting grade on Jared Hocker, Texas A&M. So, I don't think he'll go before probably, but depending on the injury, he may go on the sixth. That would be a guy that would certainly fit what we're talking about here. And Jaquan Hardy from Tiffin, I think, is a really nice football player.
Your guy,
running back. Yeah,
that's it. All right. Thank you for all the questions. Wish we could get to more. Maybe next time we will. As always, please subscribe, rate, comment, follow Lance at Lance Zierlein on Twitter. I'm at DP Brugler. Please check out the draft guide on The Athletic. All the draft coverage we have, it's outstanding. Make sure you're keeping up with all of Lance's profiles, prospect profiles at NFL.com. That'll do it for today. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.